Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back. We're talking about minute 113 through 114, and we got a mid-sentence cut off, so I'm just going to go right into it.
Okay.
Yesterday, we ended with Kwisatz Haderach. Now that you can see our past, you can see your future.
That's right. So that's what Paul can do.
We have our mysterious figure walking through the desert, mm-hmm. wearing Paul's clothes, but it is not Paul.
Yep. Knife on the knee, by the way, which was pretty cool.
Knife on the knee, unique placement. Well, maybe not unique. We've definitely seen it in other places, but it's also not Paul because Paul doesn't wear his Chris knife on his knee.
Yeah.
He wears it on his back.
I like this. That's a good placement. Probably not the most practical, but it's a good, just like quick draw Chris knife placement.
I guess it depends on how many rocks you're just kind of posted up on and like slob squatting onto. So
True. I wonder if it's on like a hinge where it can like rotate freely.
Probably not.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
So this person crests the dune that they're walking up, and we see,
notably, this person is struggling a little more than other Fremen that we've seen walk up dunes.
Right.
You know, this isn't a Paul and Chani situation where it's just like, boop, 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 boop. There we go.
Yeah.
Like, this person's having to like put a little work in to walk up some sand.
Right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. It was nice. It was nice. I felt seen.
Yeah. But as we're beginning to crest the dune, we hear a sound we haven't heard in a very long time.
Yeah.
And we see an ocean.
What? We see the ocean, and notably the Caladan theme is playing in the background here.
Yes.
We get the Caladanian music, which was awesome. I fucking loved hearing that again.
Recently rewatched part one.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I fell asleep to part one.
Sure, of course.
But man, that music from part one.
Very, very, very
fantastic.
Good.
I mean, music from part two is also fantastic, but like, yeah.
So, presumably, Paul starts to walk down this big dune, and this reminded me, this is a hyper-specific America reference here. Have you ever heard of Sleeping Bear Dunes National Park?
No.
Okay. So, it's you may have, but maybe just not by the name. But it's a place in, I believe, Minnesota. So the Great Lakes that we have here in the U.S., sections of them have sand dunes.
Okay.
And there's this one particular dune that is a massive, descent into the water. It's about a 450-foot drop. And people can walk down it.
Okay.
And, you know, they try to get back up. When the National Park Service says that to walk from the bottom where the water is to the very top, on average, takes 2 hours.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it is steep.
Holy shit.
It is a fucking steep walk back up. And if you get stuck, which people do, people, you know, can't make it back up the whole way. You know, their eyes are bigger than their feet, I guess. I don't know, whatever. It is a $3,000 fine. I say fine. It will cost you $3,000 for the rescue crew to come out and get you.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it is crazy. Now this was in my head because recently I saw a video of a group of about, I don't know, it was maybe 12 to 15 guys, carrying a massive, like, telephone pole all together up this dune. It was part of, it was either some kind of like pseudo military operation. Maybe it was like a fraternity challenge thing. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But they were doing it and they made it.
God damn.
But it is insane. And it is about the same slope as what we're seeing right here.
Yeah. No, this is a very large, like a fucking huge dune.
Yes.
Very steep too. Yeah. So
looks like Sleeping Bear Dunes National Park. Look it up if you want to see that dune, because I honestly thought, like, if I didn't know that this movie was filmed on location, like in the Middle East and like all the desert scenes and everything, I would have swore that they filmed this particular section at that dune.
Yeah.
because it's just a massive sand dune that goes right down to the water. And, you know, the Great Lakes are big enough to where they're small oceans, basically.
Yeah. I mean, they're fucking massive, so.
Yeah. So we cut down to the bottom of the dune where presumably Paul is standing right by the water. And we are graced with a new voice in the movie.
My brother, my dearest brother, you are not prepared for what is to come. You'll now learn the truth about our family and it will hurt you to the core. Paul, don't worry. I'm with you. I love you.
Right.
And it is not Paul.
It is not Paul. And as this line is being said, in voiceover, mostly,
except mostly. For the Paul and I love you.
Yeah. Paul and I love you are the only words that are actually mouthed. We get a turn to camera by Anya Taylor-Joy and
Saint Alia of the Knife is here.
Saint Alia has officially made her non-fetal debut.
Yeah. Not the first time that we've seen her.
Yeah.
We saw her in part one as a born baby.
Yep.
And we've seen her as shrimp baby and then sudden jump to more developed baby.
Yep.
And then more developed baby.
Right.
Still
right.
Unborn.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yes, we get grown up Alia. And boy, do you remember seeing this for the first time in the theater?
This was
like the big reveal of the movie, or one of them.
It was, and I'm going to be honest with you, I was a little just like...
Yeah, no, I agree.
When I saw that it was Anya Taylor-Joy. Not that I think that Anya Taylor-Joy isn't a good actress. I think she's been fantastic in some of the things that I've seen her in. Specifically thinking of Last Night in Soho, and obviously Queen's Gambit.
Oh, yeah,
Queen's Gambit's great. And The Menu.
Oh, yeah, love that movie.
Yeah. But I don't think that she wouldn't have been my first choice of an actress to play Alia. In fact, one of her co-stars from Last Night in Soho, I think, would have been a better choice as Thomasin McKenzie for Alia. And the reason why I say that is because Thomasin McKenzie and Timothy Chalamet look much more believable as siblings than Anya Taylor-Joy and Timothy Chalamet do. Zach's looking up who Thomasin McKenzie is.
So I don't know this person. Okay. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. They both have the, like, really pale, big forehead, wavy brown hair kind of look. But yeah, Anya Taylor-Joy, I'm excited to see her, but I feel like there could have been better casting. That said, what is Dune if not let's get, you know, all the big stars to go play characters in Dune?
Yeah, and you know, I have feelings, because obviously I'm not in the industry.
Sure.
But I can understand why people would be upset about this.
Mm-hmm.
Casting a very big name actor in this 30-second spot.
Sure. In fairness, part one, we had some Chani.
Yeah.
Mostly it was, you know, just visions cut up, and then we had the last few minutes or whatever. Part two, we have not a lot of Florence Pugh, but definitely more Florence Pugh as Irulan than, you know, what we have of Alia here.
Sure.
But in Messiah, Irulan and Alia both have much larger roles. So I think I'm going to reserve full judgment until we see Messiah and we see what they do there.
And this is what I'm saying is not to speak of the quality of their performance. Not at all. I'm really more speaking to the fact that with a big name, like a big name, title like Dune, a big name director, a big budget, sure, they have the money to afford big name actors, but that doesn't mean you always should do that.
Yeah.
You know, this is a great platform to elevate new actors to get new names in the industry.
And we see that too with some of the actors and actresses for, you know, Dune.
Yeah.
But it's always the more minor characters
that
we see that with rather than, you know, the big ones, you know. Jason Momoa, for instance, as Duncan Idaho,
sure.
Josh Brolin as Gurney Halleck, Oscar Isaac as Leto the first. You know, that's where they're going to put their money because they need to also get people to come see the movie.
Right? Yeah. Like, yes. No, I agree with that. It's just, does every character that has, you know, any substantial part in the movie need to be a household name already? You know, this, like, it can, you know, make room for others, make room for more people. Cause you can, you have the ability to do that.
I think that's where the TV shows will definitely shine more than the movies.
I hope. I genuinely hope.
Yeah. Because there were actors and actresses in the TV shows, like Mark Strong, obviously we've all seen Mark Strong in a million things.
Sure.
But, a lot of the actors and actresses from Prophecy, I hadn't seen in other things.
Yeah, so. And I mean, unless you're like super well versed in British TV and movies.
Sure. I mean, we had definitely seen. I'm blanking on who portrays Tula, but we had seen Tula in some other shows before.
Sure.
We had seen Valya in some other shows, most notably in Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
For me, like that was like. Fuck yeah, you did a fantastic job there.
So. Sure. No, I don't know. I have the same feelings as anytime I see a commercial for a multi-million dollar corporation that employs Matthew McConaughey.
All right.
Yeah, or I'm using them as an example, not to pick on
Matthew. Are you dogging on Lincoln right now?
No, I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah.
You're a movie star. Why are you doing TV commercials? Just because they're paying $1 million, you know, dollars to do it.
Why is Christoph Waltz doing voiceover for SAP?
Right. You know, so part of my job, we deal with Salesforce.
Why is Ace Frehley advertising Salesforce?
Well, no, okay. This is a real life example. Like, and I get an email from Salesforce one day, and I'm picking on Salesforce at this point, but,
Working on multi-billion dollar companies.
I know, poor things. But they had an advertisement or like a notification for like one of their upcoming big conferences. And Kristen Bell was like the keynote speaker.
What the fuck does Kristen Bell know about fucking CRMs?
Right. I'm just like, what is this? Like, why?
No dog on Kristen Bell. I love her.
No,
I
she's think great. She's a fantastic- but it's just like, what? This makes no sense. Like, that's just spending money to spend money. And that makes no sense to me. So anyways, I'm getting on my rant. I need to stop this.
Back to Dune.
Yes.
This is our first time seeing a grown Alia.
Yep.
And our first time hearing directly from Alia and not through Jessica.
Correct. And this is the moment that launched 1,000 beeves.
Shot heard round the world for exactly. Zach.
Yes.
Okay.
When I saw this, I was excited to see Alia, but my book nerddom was like, how the fuck are they going to tie this back together? Because Alia is a grown ass person right now.
Alia in this scene is like 30.
Yeah. Or thereabouts. Yeah. It's like, all right, we're about to get some more timeline fuckery.
Yep.
And we don't know yet. We don't know how they're going to portray it in part three, but it's going to be something.
I think they're going to save it by extending the duration between the end of part two and the start of Messiah and just say it's been 12 years between the end of Dune and Messiah in terms of...
It's been 12 years since...
and they're going to say it's been 20 years or whatever.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. That's probably where they're going to take it. And then you're going to have to do the whole thing about, okay, why do Paul and Alia look the same age? Okay, she had an elevated growth because she was born under spice. And then Paul has a decelerated growth or aging because of his spice. So apparently it can do both. It can speed it up and slow it down. So I don't know. It opens the door for a lot of like hand wavy magic and as opposed to the total normal space magic that we get to see.
Yeah.
So I don't know. These are going to be my beeves until the movie comes out. And sure. We see how they handle it.
Well, we'll have to just sit with them because ultimately there's nothing you or I can do about this. So
I'll text Denny later and we'll see if we can get
him. Yeah. ADV.
Yeah, exactly. I say all that out of one side of my mouth, and then the other side of my mouth is going to say, I really enjoyed this scene.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed seeing Alia. It was really cool. I remember it being like a hype moment in the movie. And I still, because again, as I've said many times, I haven't watched this movie in totality in a long time. Mm-hmm. Before doing these minutes, I was equally as excited to see her now.
I really appreciate that they have that really weird, unhealthy obsession that Alia has with Paul.
Yes. Yep.
I was worried that they might have like toned it back a little bit, but even from, you know, these very short lines, mm-hmm. we get that Alia has a weird fucking relationship with Paul, and she's like fully devoted to him and yep. like is obsessed over him and everything. Well,
and I think we see that on screen with the only words that her mouth actually forms the shape of is Paul and I love you.
Not that you've never told your brothers or your family members or your sister that you love them, but not in that weird way.
No, we keep it professional.
Handshakes only.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we call each other by our last names. Of course I say, I love you to my brothers and sisters.
Sure. But not in a weird whispery, like
borderline sensual way.
Yeah.
No, we don't have that kind of relationship. Anyways. Yes, I think that's, it's more to, to highlight that those are the important, I mean, everything that she's saying is important, but that is, you know, double emphasis on Paul and I love you.
Yeah.
And then we cut away, and that is the 10 seconds of screen time that Anya Taylor-Joy gets in Dune Part 2.
And we'll see you next year in Messiah.
Right. Exactly.
I refuse to call it part 3.
Well, okay. I agree. It should be called Messiah. I'm going to call it part 3 for...
I'll call it part 3 for the podcast when we sure. get there. But
yeah.
I won't be happy about it.
So...
And I'll be very clear about that in our first episode for part 3 too.
So we smash cut back to the Maker Keeper, Reverend Mother Jessica, and a unknown Fremen walking rather hurriedly back to the temple.
There's a small crowd out in front of the temple, too.
Yeah.
And that's going to be very important here in just a moment.
Yeah, it is. Jessica says, who else knows about this? And Maker Keeper responds, only you, Reverend Mother. And Jessica says, good.
Not that one.
She says, good. And then she turns to the unknown walking beside them and says, where are the others? And we get a response. They have just arrived from the north.
And our minute ends there. Yes. And technically kind of ticks over the minute a little bit, but because of our rule of mm-hmm. it's in Chakopsa, the dialogue is on screen, we're, you know, sticking to that.
Yep.
If Jessica's the only one that knows, why the fuck is there, you know, a camp outside of the Maker Temple when there wasn't one when we saw Paul show up minutes ago? Because Paul showed up to the Maker Temple by himself. There was no one out front.
There was no one out front. Sure. This could be the people who are on Paul's worm. They have just finally made their way there.
I think because Paul probably rode a worm by himself.
That does not seem likely. They were carrying the sick and injured.
But Paul had said, I will go south with you, but I will go do what must be done. Meaning that Paul knew that he was going to, you know, deviate away the moment that they crossed the storm belt. So why would he bring others with him?
Because the Fremen are mainly, or amongst other things, they care about efficiencies.
I understand that.
Now, why would they call a whole fucking worm, waste all those thumpers for Paul to ride by himself?
Are you going to deny the Lisan al Gaib his own worm?
I think that the Nisan al Gaib would be right there with the efficiencies and making sure that he was carrying people down too.
I don't know. I feel like if the Lizan al-Ghaib tells you something and says that this is how it must be done, the devoted would not question.
True. Okay. So let's see if we can cut the sandworm in half then. Maybe these are people who just saw Paul go in and they got super interested.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, I think, you know, something's happening.
Or maybe people just show up every day. I don't know. It's just, it's just like, I thought it was funny where it's like, who else knows about this? Only you. There's a crowd out in front.
Yeah. What about them?
Yeah.
Something different. Hootie and the Blowfish is playing later.
Hey, that'd be a cool show.
Hell yeah, that'd be an awesome show.
Water of Life and Hootie and the Blowfish.
Hell yeah.
Bucket hats galore. All right. I think we're dragging this one on.
Yeah, this is, yeah. Okay. So, I'm saving all of my book stuff for tomorrow because this is what it makes sense for tomorrow to talk about it. The only thing that I will say right now is one of the big discrepancies is the directions. All of this stuff that we see with Paul taking the Water of Life and the Fremen arriving happens in the north, and they are coming from the south in the books. So I'll talk about that more. It'll make more sense once I talk about everything, but it's a pointed difference that Paul does not make a journey to the south, like a big, massive journey to the south at this point in the books. It's all about certain people coming from the south to the north where Paul is.
Sure. I think from a movie telling perspective, though, we've known that the south was always completely sure. abandoned and uninhabited, supposedly, and Fade and the Harkonnens only care about the north. So realistically,
which is, yeah, totally
the
fine.
South is the safe place.
Yeah,
I understand.
Totally
the
fine. Now the only reason that it's, or the reason that I picked up on that it's like that in the books is because Paul is like, you know, mid fighting. You know, he's doing all of his sure. attacks and everything. So it would not make sense, you know, from an economical standpoint for him to go south to do this and then come back.
Yeah.
Anyways, that is splitting of the finest hairs.
In the books, we also have 2 years of time jump.
Sure.
There's that. Anyways, that's going to be it for today's episode. We will wrap it up tomorrow for this whole week. Zach's got a lot to talk about, I'm sure, from the book, so we'll dive into more of that then. In the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap this week up, and we'll see you then.
See ya.